Ba 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 ba. Hip and the lip. Ba 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 ba. From the gnome parts of metropolitan New York City, I am the hip, and this is the lip.
Yes, good evening, everybody, in Hip and the Lip Nation on this Thanksgiving holiday shortened week, I'm sure for most of you, a three-day work week, and give you a little appetizer for your Thanksgiving meal with a little Hip and the Lip. Hello, yes, all you hipsters God. Out there. All right.
That's brutal. I have an appetizer. Okay. Appetizer, entree, cream pie, dessert.
Yes, the emphasis on the cream pie, as I'm sure everybody will be enjoying as soon as they complete this podcast.
Well, if they watch it on YouTube, they could watch it live on YouTube right now. If they were aware that this episode is being aired, and in fact, I did just tweet out that we are doing an episode, so it is possible to be discovered live, watching our faces and watching, more importantly, the lips hand gestures. And body movements not in synchronization.
it's just to disorient our listeners slash viewers. You know, just
so we are a New York sports podcast, and we got plenty to cover here. Giants with a victory yesterday, hosting the Bears. Now it's 7-3. We'll touch upon the Jets at most because we're at the point where it's just little, you know, nipping the tip of the team. And this time we're going to put a little bit more time on some college football with a huge game
this
coming Saturday at noon. OSU. And we'll get to the Islanders. There's always an anticipated rant, especially the way this team is going. So looking forward to that from the left. Well,
remember, they've only played one game since our last podcast. So.
Yeah, and then it seems like in our cheat sheet here, they have more content than we've typically have when there's five games. So something I don't really understand.
We'll
figure that out. So then a little bit of Knicks and Hipster Beer of the Week. And you have to follow us on Twitter at Hip in the Lip or like us on Facebook. Subscribe to us on PyTunes, right? Because I'm thinking
of iTunes.
So,
yes. cream pie tunes.
With that, your New York Football Giants gave some frustration in the first half to the fan base, down by 10, with a missed extra point and some sluggish offensive plays and springing the defense some leaks, and they got stuff figured out in the second half, kind of just. A very similar scripted game for the Giants as we've seen, I feel like, in previous weeks. But I'll let you get to it. It kind of feels almost a little boring now that they're on this winning streak. How many games in a row now are we at?
I think it's five games now. They were 2-3.
Five-game winning streak for the Giants. Their best record since 2000, this deep into the season, since 2008 when they were 9-1. So, you know, in a league of mediocrity, they're trying to stay a little bit above it, and they continue, you know, and they have a walkover game next week that would be a disastrous loss. But then the fun really gets going. But let's get your take on your Giants.
I think you summed it up well. You said it was a very similar scripted type of game to what we've seen from this team all year. As you just iterated, they will have their last cream-filled cupcake game of the year next week against the Cleveland Browns before their schedule ramps up with the Steelers and the boys and the Redskins, who just trounced the Green Bay Packers last night. Ooh. A lot of Packers done, or they done. Stick a fork in them.
I feel bad for Aaron Rodgers. The dude could only do so much.
Not that he's playing perfect.
He's not perfect, but come on. I mean, you know, that defense is just non-existent. He can't really make up for it.
Yeah, no, I mean, their defense is horrific. I mean, they just – they it just seemed like they don't even show up now. It's amazing what's going on with that team. And now you're hearing whispers that McCarthy might be out. And I guess Jet fans will be licking their chops at the idea of bringing in McCarthy and booting out Todd Bowles, but see how that shakes out. But anyway, on the Giants.
I doubt it. Come on. That's like New York sports talk.
What, booting out the Todd Bowles?
When was the last time the Packers finished a season under 500? I'm thinking, I don't know.
Oh, you mean about McCarthy? You saw it actually written about a little bit today that he, you know, maybe a change is just needed. Sometimes you just say, you know what, we had a great run. You know, he's been here. How long has he been the coach now? He's got to be, 10 years?
So he has more? God forbid he has one season under 500. And next.
It's not to punish him for a bad season. It's to say, you know what, we've had a good run here. Maybe it's time to part ways, move on, bring in a new voice, you know, because McCarthy would be scooped up right away. We know that. McCarthy would absolutely have another head coaching job waiting for him if he were to be let go. I'm not saying that they will. I'm not saying that they necessarily should, but I would not be shocked at this point. You've seen it written about a little bit and talked about a little bit. But maybe it just comes to a point where a team says, hey, we need to bring in a new voice, new leadership, just change, a new regime. And, you know, sometimes change isn't always for the better, but sometimes a change is needed. And it may be the case for our New York Jets. We'll see how that works itself out as the season will painfully continue on next week against the New England Patriots. Tom Brady and company coming to town. So
I'm not letting this Packer thing go. We're going off on a tangent within the first 3 minutes. But
all right,
The Packers, before last year they were 10-6. They made the playoffs. They finished second in the NFC North. They finished in first place four years in a row before that. And the year before that, in 2010, they were 10-6, finished second. In 2009, they were 11-5 and finished second. 2008, they were 6-10. That was their last year under 500 under McCarthy. So you're going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years above 500. Make the playoffs every year, and then now because they have this one down year, maybe it's time for a change. Okay, fine. Okay, back to you, Giants.
Well, I mean, I understand what you're saying. All right, well, we'll see if it actually happens. I'm not saying that it will or that it should. We'll see how it shakes itself out. But anyway, back to the Giants. So, I mean, really a lackluster first half, ho-hum first half for the Giants, which we have talked, we've described other segments of other games as being lackluster or ho-hum. And, I mean, really, they didn't look really good at all. They played down to their opponent. You know, it was talked about all week. Oh, the Giants, they can't take the Bears lightly or, play down to them. And they always seem to do that, at least. That's just the MO of this Giant team. We, seen it time and time again. Not just this year, I mean, just going back in years past. But, they were able to kind of regroup after the first half came to an end. You know, they were able to get a field goal towards the end of the first half, which was, pretty big, actually, in the game. They were able to convert a couple fourth downs, I should say, in that first half, which allowed them to score their first touchdown and then tack on that second, their first field goal after the missed extra point, which I guess we'll touch on a little bit as there were so many of those yesterday. And in the second half, they came out guns blazing, the offense. They were able to come right down the field, boom, 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 two touchdowns. Giants take the lead. The Bears would not get another point. They only had 100 yards or 106 yards of total offense in the second half, did the Bears. So the Giant defense really clamped down. Pressure on Cutler. Collins, another, really good game. Interception that sealed it. The Giants were able to come away with the victory. The one thing that gave you concern, at least from an offensive standpoint in the second half, was that after those two touchdowns, they did nothing offensively. The fourth quarter, they had four punts in the fourth quarter. They gave the ball back to Cutler, who we've seen him, pull games out of the fire multiple times in his career. I mean, the guy, as much of a malign quarterback as he is talented, and he has the ability to make plays, despite the fact that he didn't have his top wide receiver, and he lost Zach Miller, who had a couple of big plays against the in that game early in the first half yesterday. But they punted the ball back to him four separate times. They couldn't get a first down, you know, on any of their last four drives in the fourth quarter. Couldn't run the ball. A very conservative, you know, offensive game plan in the fourth quarter there. Just running the ball into the line and falling down, it seemed like, was their game plan. Odell Beckham had an opportunity to get a first down, I think, a couple of times. I remember one where he had the ball knocked out of his hand, which I thought he gave a very poor effort on. So just to criticize Beckham there for something not related to celebrations, I don't know what the hell Beckham was doing there. A poor effort on that. One particular play was a third down. He didn't get the first down when he had an opportunity to. And that was really, that's really what you take out of this game yesterday. They were able to come away with the win. You don't throw it away. You never throw away a win in the NFL, as we know. And they move on. They 7-3. They keep pace with the Cowboys, who keep winning, and the Redskins, who win again as well, as we mentioned. And you just hope that they can, you know, find a rhythm offensively. And I mean, if they don't do it next week, I don't think they ever will for this season. I mean, if you can't go out and just score a ton of points at will against the hapless Cleveland Browns, something is seriously wrong with that offense. And they better get their running game going. They better make some big plays offensively in the passing game. And let's see them put up a 30 spot and have a little bit of a laugher against a bad football team.
Well, let's see. It'll be interesting if it's inclement weather in Cleveland next week, because that could always have an impact on the ability to run up the score. Not an excuse, but you know, Pittsburgh, it took a while for them to get going at Cleveland yesterday, because it was a very, very slow start for the Steelers in Pittsburgh, and I think they didn't win by, they didn't blow away the Browns.
Strong wind in that. Just like a Giants Stadium, really strong wind. So they didn't throw the ball Pittsburgh. They just ran it with Le'Veon Bell. Of course, he ran for a zillion yards. So if he's just got, you know, if he's going to gash that terrible Cleveland rush defense like he did, I guess why the hell throw the ball? Just have him run it. But they don't have a Le'Veon Bell.
Rashad Jennings is not quite a gasher. He's a get what's blocked, no more. Grind out yards, not fumble it, pass protect, catch some passes. So maybe this is where they unleash Paul Perkins a little bit more than they have to this point.
From a fantasy standpoint, I hope you're right, yes. Even though the WGAS hipsters are done.
Nobody cares about your fantasy team, Littman.
Well, they will after I win our championship.
That was meant to sound like the nobody cares about hockey boomer.
Nobody cares about
your fantasy team, Lip.
We'll see about that. Because the Rangers, when they had success, then people, I guess, have to care on that show, just like on this show, since the last of the H's are having success this year. I think everybody will have to know and appreciate that, and we'll be very excited by that, yes. All right, next.
Yes, I am not. So, all right, well, they got Cleveland next week, and then it's really, that's where the fun starts. So, you know, a lot of teams fighting for playoff spots. So each game is going to have incredible performance, incredible significance in December. Okay. I'm ready to go on to.
Well, one more thing I just want to touch on, just really quickly, I promise. But you saw the rookie head coach, and I kind of chided McAdoo a little bit with his cliches, you know, his coaching for dummies book, and you know, mastering the chapter on, you know, spouting out coaching cliches. Well, how about reading the chapter that tells you that if you, at the end of a game, of a one-score game, where you have an opportunity to decline a penalty and not give your opposition an opportunity with an extra down to make a play and potentially score a game-winning touchdown, you don't accept the damn penalty and give him an extra down, an opportunity, which is exactly what he did yesterday. There was an illegal shift penalty on the Bears on a second down and 24 play in which it was an incomplete pass, so it would have been third and 24. But instead of declining the penalty, he accepts it, and it goes then to second and 29 instead of third and 24. And he said, oh, you push him back. I want the 5 yards instead of giving him the extra down, instead of taking away the down and making him have to get 24 yards on two plays. So I have no idea what the hell he was doing there. It was a stupid decision. And the fact that he defended it today is alarming. Hopefully he only did it just to save face, and he had people within his coaching staff and organization saying, hey, Ben, you were wrong there. Don't do that again, you idiot.
You were wrong, you idiot.
You idiots. I mean, what is he doing?
You know,
accepting
Ben, you
a penalty?
Are an idiot. You are an idiot.
He is an idiot. What is he doing?
Where were they on the field, and how much time is left?
It was their last drive of the game, right? It was actually right before the Collins interception.
Where were they on the field?
That was like at the 40 or something in Giants territory, of 45, 40, somewhere there.
And oh, really? Yeah, Giants territory.
Yeah, they were in Giants territory. You cannot accept the penalty. Decline it. Now it's 3rd and 24. Stop them. Don't give them the extra 5 yards there.
You idiot.
And give them an extra down. I mean, well, it's not even a debatable
you
point.
Idiot. You
idiot. And that's a rookie head coaching mistake. You didn't realize. You got caught up in the moment. Fine. Learn from it and acknowledge that you were wrong and don't do it again.
Yeah, I'm sure you. Come on, I'm sure he acknowledged it, just not to your face, okay? Well, you know, maybe that he hears the incensed lip over this, and he'll give you a phone call and have a discussion behind closed doors to admit to you that he's an idiot, and we could all move on.
Well, he doesn't have to do that. Just tell me, we want to play physical football. We want to establish the run. It's very important that we establish the run. We want to stop the run. Very important that we stop the run. You know, we want to be consistent in our offensive scheme, and we want to not commit penalties or turnovers. Turnovers are bad. So are penalties bad. And we want to just play physical brand of football. All right, thanks, Ben. Next.
We want to be consistent on both sides of the mouth like his mustache. He's got far down his lip with that porn stash he's got.
It's actually kind of H, I guess, if you think about it, since you don't usually see...
kind of looks creepy.
Yeah, it always looks creepy. It's 70s-style porn.
Coming from you.
Stash.
Coming from you, especially, to say that it's creepy really means something. All right.
Uh-oh, hand gestures again. All right, next.
You know what? All right. My New York Jets are the mirror image of the Giants at 3-7.
And
it was announced today that Mr. Fitzy will get the start against New England on Sunday because he's healthy and because you don't just lose your job.
I actually just thought of the perfect headline. They should have this in the back page of every paper. Fitz and the tantrums. Oh, is that perfect or what? Think about it. Fitz and the tantrums. Everybody's throwing a tantrum over him starting. Right? Oh, my God.
You might have to get copyright.
Clever. Oh, that is brilliant. I'm going to pat myself on the back, just like Gart Snow's doing right now. Well done, Lip.
Got to sing their best song. You know their best song?
Money Grabber. Oh, Money Grabber. That's a good one, too. I like so that actually can be a good metaphor or pun to describe some New York sports athletes and people in management. So maybe we'll get to that a little bit later. All right.
Just trying to remember what their most pop, the first song, their biggest hit.
Oh, it's not Money Grabber?
Yeah,
Money Grabber, don't come back.
I mean, that is a big one. This is where I get frustrated.
Usually he's like that when it comes to remembering.
Right. Well, it's not picking up the pieces. And what the heck was the?
Oh yeah, I know that one. Yeah, picking up. Yeah, I know that one.
That's the name of the album, but the song "Dear Mr. President" was the big one. All right. Anyway. I have these moments where if I can't think of a song, I can't focus on anything else but figure it out and then I can move on, which we're doing here. So, look, Fitzpatrick's getting the start. I guess Bowles is justifying it by saying he's light years ahead of Petty, essentially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about your good friend, Manish Mehta, who's saying that doesn't matter and the Jets need to at least evaluate Petty, and you evaluate him by getting him in games. You're 3-7. Fitzpatrick's not going to be here next year. And I see his side of the argument. But I think it doesn't matter what record you are or where you are in the season. You don't want to get embarrassed by the Patriots. Well, might they get embarrassed by the Patriots with Fitzpatrick? Sure. But I think it's an all but guarantee if you play Bryce Petty. So this is more of like a let's at least try to be competitive with the Patriots for one game and show them that we still have some heart. And you know what? You win a game and you're 4-7 and mathematically you're still alive and you keep starting Fitzpatrick until you're not mathematically.
I agree. I agree with you.
That's the joke.
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying that you agree with Bull's decision, I don't know if you're explicitly stating that. If you are, I agree. I mean, look, you want to make the argument that Petty should just play at this point, fine. But you know what? He didn't light it up last week. I mean, I understand it was a conservative game plan. I get
he didn't come
that, but,
close to lighting. He didn't do anything.
Exactly. So, you know, I understand you have to learn about it. And look, you'll see him again. It's not like you're not going to see Petty again this year. You will definitely see him again. I'd be surprised if you don't, unless Fitzpatrick all of a sudden, you know, kind of revives himself and leads the Jets on a magic carpet ride and beat the Pats twice and finish 9-7. But that's what Bowles has in mind right now. He thinks that
why throw in the towel? Why do it now?
Right. And you know what? I can't blame him. I saw multiple articles written, you know, on the Post site, and you mentioned Manish Mehta in Daily News. Oh, this is an insult to the Jet fans and blah blah blah. You know what? Stop it. We're gonna Bryce Petty was a fifth or sixth round pick out of a, you know, the complete antithesis of a pro offense in Baylor. You know what? I don't think the Jets starting quarterback next year is on the roster. I really don't. I mean, Hackenberg, I think, is going to be a disastrous second-round pick. I mean, it's disastrous right now because you used your second-round pick on a guy that has zero chance of helping you this year and is not exactly a guy that, I mean, if you thought it was, you know, if you thought that he was that good of a quarterback to be drafted that high, then maybe he would have been playing right now anyway. But, you know, I don't think their opening day quarterback next year is on the roster currently, if you ask my honest opinion. And I don't have any issue with Fitzpatrick starting on Sunday. I really don't. I mean, if you wanted to argue Petty, you know, you can make the argument, but I don't have an issue with this either. So.
Yeah. Because if you start Petty with a healthy Fitzpatrick, because Fitzpatrick has been deemed fully healthy last week, maybe he was still a little, you know, iffy or whatever. He's fully healthy. If you go with Petty, you're basically saying, all right, this is about looking towards next year. And you're not going back to Fitzpatrick unless Petty just, you know, is like easily the worst starting quarterback in the NFL. There'd be no turning back. So why do that? You're going to have a chance to see Petty later on.
I'd be surprised.
Unless the Jets do this crazy miracle run, which we all know is not happening.
Most likely not.
All right.
But, hey, look, you're not going to give up on the season. I think the one thing that you can argue is that if Fitzpatrick could have if he could have physically played last week, because you kept, you know, you heard, well, maybe if their record was, you know, wasn't 3-6, maybe he'd be playing.
Well, that's what I said.
Right. It was kind of like intimated that he may have, you know, he was 100%, but may have physically been able to play. So if that was the case, and why didn't he just play last week instead of, you know, playing Petty, losing again, and go 3-7, and now you come back to Fitzpatrick this week? But we don't know how hurt he was or if he really could have played. If they, you know, maybe if they were undefeated, he still doesn't play last week because he was that hurt. But he's back, I guess, healthy this week. So I don't know. Make of it what you will. But, you know,
425, I will be there. Look forward to the disaster.
Well, better than 8:30. I'm sure you'd much rather have a 4:25 game than an 8:30 game and have to go to that.
I mean, it's a Sunday night, you know, going to work the next day after an 8:30 game, always lovely.
Exactly.
All right. Well, you wanted to mock the NFL a little bit because you take any chance that you can here, and even though you watch, you know, it as much as anyone that listens. But what's your little jab at them tonight?
I guess if you're referring to the next the heading there, I mean, it was just pretty comical how the NFL yesterday, you saw 12 missed extra points, including three in that Giants-Bears game, two by the former Bear kicker, Robbie Gould, and then one by the Bear kicker. But you saw 12, which I guess was like the first time you saw that many missed extra points in like half a century or something like that. So it's just kind of comical just seeing that. But one thing I wanted to take a jab at the NFL at was, and this was something that was brought up today by a caller on Mike's show, and then I looked at there were multiple things that were written about this. Is the NFL Monday Night Football game that's going on right now is taking place in Mexico City, and the caller said that I guess like the altitude there is like 2,000 feet higher than even Denver, which is the highest altitude above sea level in the NFL. And you always hear about, you know, just how difficult it could be to breathe there, and you know, your players on oxygen. And I looked at a couple of the articles, and I guess a doctor, a local doctor in Mexico City, said that playing in that stadium in that city, there could for the players, it could result in headaches, dizziness, sensation of fatigue, accelerated heartbeat, hyperventilation. And this is due in part to the altitude, but also because of the terrible air quality there. So, and I guess you could also potentially have respiratory symptoms that when you're exposed to that type of pollution. So nice that the NFL cares so much about its players that they look for another money grabber NFL, Roger Goodell. Yes, money grabber, by playing this stupid game in Mexico City instead of just playing it in Houston or, I guess, who is it a home game for? Oakland, I think, right? So, yeah. So of course, this is just another money grab by the NFL. What else is new? Who cares? The players be damned. Terrible air quality. Who cares? Whatever.
Give ESPN credit for not holding back on making it clear that this is the high altitude and the conditions. I think, just watching the first half, we're in late third quarter now, but watching the first half, I think I noticed three times separately that they listed or mentioned the altitude during the game.
But did 7,500 feet. Did they also mention the air pollution also?
I don't know if I heard the air pollution specifically.
Well, that they probably, I guess, they wanted to give the appearance of transparency. So that's why they mentioned the altitude, because also you would probably on the sideline see how many players with oxygen masks. So you go, what the hell is going on? And so I guess they had to mention that. But we won't mention the air pollution. I'm sure the NFL.
I'm not saying they didn't mention it. I didn't watch it. Incredibly
well,
closely.
I did see the beginning where they mentioned and you saw one of the players, a couple of the players with the air masks, but and they mentioned the altitude, but I didn't note that they didn't mention the air pollution. So I'm sure the NFL put the kibosh on that and said, "Hey, ESPN, don't mention the air pollution. It's been written about in several articles today, in several publications. So don't mention."
Too bad the NFL knows that you're going to be talking about it. So I don't understand why they would have told ESPN to not mention it.
And by the way, Roger, how's that investigation going on? Ezekiel Elliott, you know, the new superstar for the Cowboys, America's team that's currently in first place and America's darlings. And how's that domestic violence investigation going on, Roger? I haven't heard much about that recently. What's going on, Roger? Have an answer for that one, Roger? Silence. I see silence, yes. Surprising.
Well, he's just praying that there's no diary or videotape or photo evidence lurking in the shadows.
Hey, if we can sweep it under the rug until next year, perfect. Maybe we'll suspend him
until the off season.
Well, maybe we'll suspend him for like the first 5 minutes of a quarter or something next year. Anyway, yep. So maybe this will have to be a weekly segment.
The Cowboys would be sure to kick it off in that game anyway. So
exactly. Yeah, well, the NFL never leaves a shortage of anything to go at them on. So
let's shift the discussion from NFL to college. We've not really talked about college all too much. Last week we did get a little bit into my Michigan Wolverines. And so
yes,
here
we are Wolverines.
With Michigan football's biggest game in 10 years. So 10 years ago, Michigan and Ohio State were 1-2 in the country when they played in 2006. And Ohio State won that game. Michigan
very
in the
high
last
scoring
12
game
games. It was, Ohio State got into the 30s.
I think they both did. I want to say like maybe even like high 30s, low 40s. I mean, it was a very high scoring game from what I remember.
Yeah. So, Michigan is 1-11 in the last 12 games against Ohio State. Just to show you how, insignificant comparatively Michigan has been with Ohio State. Ohio State has multiple national championships since, if I have the facts straight, I believe they do.
Yeah, well, Urban Meyer versus Rich Rodriguez wasn't exactly a fair fight, so I guess.
And then Brady Hoke.
Brady Hoke. That's right. I forgot about Brady too. But at least the playing field has been leveled a little bit with John.
Say that Michigan has come a long way, far faster than expected under Harbaugh. Not that it's a huge surprise, because it is Harbaugh, and we've seen him do this song and dance before, but given where Michigan stood at the beginning of last year, and becoming relevant immediately under Harbaugh, and now with their biggest game in 10 years, unfortunately, their quarterback, Wilton Spate, looks like he's not going to play. However, there's some doubt regarding whether his collarbone is actually fractured or not. He may just have a sprained AC joint. It's not Wilton Spate dressed last week. I didn't realize that. He
did
dressed.
Really? That's odd.
I mean, can you really dress? Would Harbaugh really risk the scrutiny if it ever came out that that Wilton Spate broke his collarbone and he dressed for that game?
I never put anything past Harbaugh because I wouldn't be shocked if he did something like that. It's just his personality. But I mean, hopefully he didn't dress him knowingly that he has a fractured collar. I don't know I haven't really heard anything about his injury.
Harbaugh hasn't said. He just keeps saying he's a okay. You know, he's not a doctor. He's not going to go into those things. Day to day. You know, that's pretty much all he's saying. So he's not, you know, and we go into this because John O'Korn just didn't look ready. You know,
Can O'Korn play at all? I mean, did they just hold him back last week? You know, did they just not allow him to make any plays with his arm, or is he just
to an extent? But when they did ask him to make some throws, you know, like he was the guy, like when there was pressure from the edges, he just kept weaving, like zigzagging backwards. You know, like he would zigzag to the left and you'd see a guy who'd zigzag to the right and he kept going back. And you know what I mean? Can you picture
that? So he was unwilling to step up. Yeah, he was unwilling to step up with already in the pocket and make a throw.
Yep. Okay. Yep. He had a big – he did have a big scramble. He had a deep pass that he just missed a guy on. He must have overthrew him by a foot. That may have – if that pass connected, maybe we'd be having a different conversation. But you know what? He didn't – he had the big scramble, but he didn't – look – I don't think he turned it over. So give him credit for that. Look, Michigan played a conservative game and they let their running game, you know, take care of business in the end. Michigan was down at halftime actually. So, you know, definitely some worry against a competitive but not incredibly good Indiana team at home. Michigan's at home.
For Michigan and Ohio State last week. Ohio State just squeaked it out too.
Ohio State's game was actually even more it was down to a 2-point convert try that Michigan State just failed on that instead of tying the game. Look, the opening line I saw, Ohio State favored by 6.5. They're at home. Ohio State is. Michigan has the nation's top pass defense. A Heisman candidate, Jabril Peppers, number 5. He will look to slow down the big weapon of Ohio State, Curtis Samuel, their halfback.
Yeah, he's having a hell of a year, right? I mean, he's put up like huge.
He's having
numbers.
A hell of a year. So there's a lot of interesting elements to this game, you know. But I think, and I see here you kind of got to it in your notes, is that Ohio State's 2 in the country, Michigan's 3. Alabama is, you know, there's so much distance separating from the body of work that these three teams have on the season. Alabama is just light years ahead of these two teams.
Alabama, it's unbelievable just year after year, just how physically good they are, just compared to everybody else. I mean, they have like 15 or 20 NFL players on that team. I mean, like, my God, how do you compete with that?
Well, you know, but for Michigan, Ohio State, it's 1 week at a time. Ohio State doesn't control their own destiny, because if they beat Michigan and Penn State wins, Penn State would actually win the Big Ten East and go to the Big Ten championship game over Ohio State, because all three teams are in the same division within the Big Ten. So Ohio State needs to win and needs help. And it would be interesting, though, I think if Penn State runs the table and Ohio State beats Michigan, you still might see Ohio State make the playoff over Penn State.
I don't know this. It's just, how do you keep Ohio State, a one-loss Ohio State that's now beaten, if they win next week, Michigan, then they beat Oklahoma. They beat who else? What was their other big win? But they had, like, you know, multiple big wins this year. And they have one loss, of course, to Penn State. I'd just be very surprised if they kept them out. I really would.
Yeah, I don't know if Penn State has any.
I mean, they wanted the top four teams in the country. I mean, come on. Yeah, Michigan, no. I mean, Michigan destroyed them when they play. And then who else they lose to? Pittsburgh, I think, right? I mean, like, Penn State, really? Come on.
Did Penn State beat anybody good outside of the Big Ten? I don't think so.
Well, they beat, other than Ohio State? I mean, no, I don't think
outside
anybody.
Outside of the Big Ten.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I don't. I mean, not that I know of. I don't think so.
So it may not be enough to justify getting in over Ohio State. So, But look,
the question is,
you know what? If Ohio State flops and Michigan wins, then Michigan gets in anyway. So Penn State wouldn't have a chance.
Well, what if? The question is, if Michigan wins next week, because then they're in the championship game, right? If they win next week.
Yes.
Okay. Michigan. And the question is, if Michigan wins next week but loses the championship game, can they still get in? Do they still get in?
Over Ohio State or Penn State?
Well, they'd be in over Ohio State, definitely. You can't take Ohio State over Michigan, and Michigan beats them next week. So Michigan will be in over Ohio State. The question is, if they lose, can they still get in over? I mean, well, I guess who would they play? They play Wisconsin, or who would they play in the Big Ten Championship?
Nebraska.
Nebraska. I mean, okay. I mean, I can't see losing Nebraska, but I mean, then Nebraska gets into the playoff. Nebraska over Michigan.
You know, a lot of scenarios here, so we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, I guess we'll see how everything else shapes out. And you have Clemson and Washington, so we'll see how all that shapes itself up. Western Michigan.
they trounced your alma mater last week.
Yeah, well, they stink. Buffalo's terrible. They're awful. Yeah, Buffalo's.
I'm sure you watched that one.
Oh, every second of each quarter. Well, literally 1 second of each quarter. I turned it on for a second in the first, second, third, and fourth.
That's your cream pie of the week. All right.
Next. Well, hopefully we'll be coming back, though, as a Michigan alum. Hopefully we'll be coming back talking about a monumental victory by the Wolverines over the Buckeyes. What rhymes with Buckeye with Buck?
Imagine if the Jets and the Wolverines both win this weekend. You'll get a very enthusiastic hip, even though for the Jets it's more of a moral victory than anything else.
Well, if you go to Vegas and bet on those two games and on those two outcomes and you come out victorious on both, you'll come back with some money.
Yeah, it's also betting. It's like pretty much putting money in the toilet if you do that.
Yeah, bet a couple of dollars and you come away with a couple thousand, I guess. All right, next.
That's all right. Yeah, well, next is, look, New York Islanders. So they've played one game since our last show. What was it? An overtime loss to their rival Pittsburgh Penguins. So now they are, 5-8-4? Is that right?
Yeah, they're something like that. Yeah. they have 5 wins, 5-8, and however many overtime losses. So I'll say 5-11 or 5-12 or something like that.
Ouch.
Yeah. Overtime losses are losses. I don't give a damn how they put it in the standings. It's a loss. So, Islanders are right now towards the very bottom of the league. That's how bad they are. They are currently the worst team in their conference. I think they have 14 points, and they are tied, actually, for the worst record in the entire league with the Arizona Coyotes, who pretty much announced before the season started they were going to be throwing the season. So
the Islanders are tied for the fewest points. They have less than half of the points of the Rangers.
Yep. And the Rangers, despite their injury issues, they keep winning. Yeah, they had a little hiccup the last week, couple losses, but they're still in pretty decent shape, I would say.
Wow, the Rangers at 14-5-1 don't have the most points in the league. The Montreal Canadiens, 14-3-2. Interesting.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so look, how much has the conversation changed from a week ago? I mean, we just had one game. They had an overtime loss. I mean, last week it was about, I think Garth is done. You know, does the new GM have to keep Jack or not? Or you just let the new GM start over and fresh and clean and –
Well, if there is a new GM, we don't know right now what the hell is going through.
But what I'm saying is there anything different to say from last week? What has really changed in a week's time?
Other than their, another just listless loss to the Penguins, in which they, looked flat again for a good portion of the game. You could just, the talent disparity, was on full display in that overtime. But I mean, since then, we've heard the GM talk, and you know, the GM has been in hiding, as is the owner currently. We haven't heard a damn peep from the owner, who you know, said he wanted to make the Islanders a world-class franchise, and we'll get to him in a second. But the GM, who I chastised last week for cowering like he always does, and this is something that's actually been talked about in the New York sports media, talking about how GMs have to make themselves more available, hold themselves accountable when things are going badly, and how the worst thing that you can do as a GM is when things are going badly to basically hide and, you know, not say anything. And we know that Garth loves to do that and not you know, take any responsibility, especially for the current mess that he's created. And so, of course, you know, he you know, speaks to the media, gives a couple of quotes, no follow-up questions, of course, God forbid, but, you know, comes out with quotes that we could have pretty much have scripted ourselves. You know, it's not my, not really, you know, without saying this, you know, of course, not my fault, but, you know, I believe in our coaching staff, and I believe in our players, and, you know, I believe in our guys, and, you know, we're going to get there, and we have to overcome adversity, and, you know, pretty much absolving himself of all responsibility instead of saying, you know what, this is on me. I put this group together. This is the, you know, I take responsibility for this. And, you know, I understand you want to deflect blame off of the players, but you know what, how about you put it on yourself? How about you finally, for once in your damn tenure as GM, for all the failures that you've had, take responsibility for himself? Of course, he won't do that. Instead, he just kind of patronizes or condescends.
Have you ever seen a GM do that?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I mean,
While they still have a job, they come out
well,
and say,
I mean, you're not going to come out and say that I failed or I've done a terrible job, but you have to, but you know what, but don't treat us like, you don't.
Get to massage it.
You don't have to treat us like we're idiots, though. I mean, I don't know if he's just condescending to the fans or patronizing the fans, but.
So what should he have said? Like, if you were writing what he should have said, what would you have written?
You know what? There's nothing for him. There's nothing, I guess, that he can say right now to assuage all the anger that we're feeling. But again, it's just
he's not going to come out and say it's on me.
It's about taking responsibility for for what the current state.
Okay. I understand, but what is he going to say? It's on me, and it's my fault, and I look forward to, you know, 10 more years of it being my fault.
You say that this right now is unacceptable. The results on the ice are unacceptable, that we should be better than this, and I am actively trying to make our team better. And I guess that's it. Again, he's not going to answer for the things that he did, for letting Oposo walk without offering him a contract, for waiving P.A. Parento, for carrying three goalies, for having Barzal, you know, just rot in the press box or wherever the hell he's sitting when you know, and not playing, and then sending him back. Yeah, I mean, he's not going to answer for all the things. We can go back to the beginning of his tenure. He's not going to answer for all his failures and everything, and all the things that he's done wrong. So we know that that's not going to happen. But again, you just say this is unacceptable. This is unbecoming of a team that went to the second round of the playoffs last year. Yes, we've lost a couple of guys, but we brought in guys that we thought would do a better job. They have not done a good job. And, of course, when he talks about Andrew Ladd, and this was basically, you know, I'll read part of the quote, you know, he said, oh, he brings different things to our club. He's a high-character guy. A lot of people don't know last year. I don't think he had many goals around Christmas, then turned it on. But he's not defined by scoring goals. He does a lot of little things like leadership. He's a winner, blah, blah, blah. Oh, really? Is that why you gave him $5.5 million a year, Garth? For all those intangibles, for all those wonderful, because they're winning a lot right now, right? He brought all those intangibles, and look how successful the team is right now, right? So I guess you know, the fact that Andrew Ladd has two goals on the air, you know, goals. That's not important. We don't need him to score goals. We gave him $5.5 or $6, whatever it was, a year for 7 years to be a leader, to be a winner, to infuse the locker room with all those intangible qualities that he has. Yeah, well, they're last in the league, Art. So I guess he's done a great job of that so far, right? So, I mean, pretty much what you heard from him is ownership is great for supporting me, and management is great because I'm management, and the coaching is great. I give full support to the coaches, even though the coaching staff is lost and has no idea how to turn this team around, and has pretty much said so. And the players are great. Everything is wonderful, but we're in last place in the entire league. Thanks, Garth. That's fantastic. So, yeah, I mean, you're hearing now a lot of, you know, lots of different trade rumors. This player,
rock
that player.
Bottom. Is this rock bottom?
Rock bottom in terms,
I mean,
of
well,
Islanders have had many. They redefine what it is to hit rock bottom, this franchise. But the question now is, what is going through the minds of Ledecky and Malkin? That's the question that I'm asking.
There's one thing where there's anticipated rock bottom, which the Islanders knew were coming for a bunch of years in the latter years at the Coliseum, not the final years, but, you know, this going into the season, you weren't expecting the team to be in last place at this point. I mean, it wasn't. Look, we're.
Yeah, you
were exercising caution. No, they're not going to be a top team. They'll maybe make the playoffs, but not be like this.
I thought they'd be a fringe playoff team. I said that he failed in his offseason before the season started because bringing in Ladd and Chimera was not good enough to replace Oposo, Nielsen, and Martin. That was not good enough. I said it throughout the summer. Hopefully, after he signed those three players, which included Parento, which, of course, was he got rid of, and now he has 5 goals for the Devils, and that would be good for second on the team, I think. That those three players was not good enough. He then subsequently gets rid of one of those players, and you see where the team is right now. You have one of those players that they brought in is 37 years old and coming off a career season. So, I mean, what the hell could you expect it from him? They have no identity. They have no idea what kind of game they want to play, what kind of hockey they want to play. They have a coach that's clueless. But you know what? We've been saying that about Capuano forever. But because Capuano won't question the GM, because Capuano won't throw him out of the room if he's giving them nonsense that he doesn't want to do or enact, because he's a complete, basically a puppet. That's why.
What would our show be like? Take a step back for a second. If we continue to only talk about the Islanders, well, we would really be struggling.
It's a good thing that the Giants are good and they're giving us something to be excited about. It's a good thing. Well, I guess you want to say the Knicks are showing signs of improvement, so we'll see how that kind of shapes itself out. But, you know, we thought the Islanders at least would at least be competitive, and so far they have been anything but. And it's I honestly
it makes it hard. You could only manipulate so and concoct so many threads when not much has changed from week to week in the crappiness.
Yeah, well, when the team doesn't improve, when the team doesn't improve, I mean, all you can just do is just just destroy them. I mean, and you know, you think about like a long baseball season. Like Met fans remember when their team stunk for 4 or 5 years in a row, whenever it was. And by the end of April, you're like, all right, well, when is football starting again?
Yeah.
Or is my hockey team or my basketball team alive in the playoffs? So, I mean, Islander fans, we dealt with that for years. You know, up our end of October, season's over. Or for Islander fans, I guess for a few years there, it was up, dropping a puck on opening night, season's over. Let's move on to anything else. So,
what a difference! We were at the game where they clinched the series against the Panthers. We were there, not too long ago.
How things have changed. No more no more Nielsen.
Yikes.
Here, welcome in Ladd and Chimera, and. This mishmash of a motley crew.
On the bright side, the front row seats will go from $10 a pop to $5 in January. So there you go.
Or maybe we'll be the victors of the craft beer raffle, and we'll be able to enjoy
some beers
while we're enjoying some wonderful hockey.
That's right. There's a craft beer suite raffle that I think they'll announce the winner within a week or so. Maybe the week after Thanksgiving. I don't remember. All right.
Yep, something like that. So let's just see. I'll just finish it up by saying, hopefully Ledecky and Malkin understand the history of this team. Hopefully they did their due diligence and their research when they bought the team, and they understand exactly what the circumstances were in terms of Garth getting his job, the way that they operated, the way that Wong operated, having an owner that didn't give a damn about winning. And hopefully they're not making their decisions in a vacuum and understand that this cannot continue. And if they meant what they said when they said they want to make the Islanders a world-class organization, they understand that changes are needed, and they're needed now. Fire the coach right now. Fire the coach. Let Wade coach.
Right
coach.
Now.
Fire the GM too. Right now. And you begin your search. You bring in hockey people, like what the Jets did, even though I know the Jet fans are not happy. You know, the team's not looking good right now. When they hired McKagnon, Woody Johnson brought in NFL people like Charlie Casserly and somebody else, I forget, and said, all right, bring me a GM. Who do you recommend? And I'll hire that guy. And that's how McKagnon came in. That's what Ledecky has to do. Go out and bring in, bring in a hockey guy, whoever, and say, find me Ledecky, a GM.
It's not like Ledecky's foreign to the sport. We talked about this when he became the owner.
If he has his guy, then he's – no, he. You're right, and that's true. So if
I'm just saying, though, when my point is more in response to when you said, you hope he's done his research, that he understands the circumstances.
Well, I don't
you think
know
the guy that. Is sharp enough to know that stuff. Why he's going silent now is probably because they're trying to figure out what to do here. It's that teams at this crossroads. We've talked about it. Do you clean house with the front office and the coach and, kind of throw the year away and, maybe make some moves next year and get this team back on track?
Well, I don't think that's really firing the coach is throwing the year away. They need a new voice in there. And look, Doug Wade is not the long-term solution. He should be an interim and nothing but. However, at least having a guy doing things differently, because you want to then if it's not Wade, then if it's Thompson or Cronin, whoever the most dissenting voice is in that room from Capuano, that's who should get the job. That's going to do things differently, not be an extension of Capuano. Somebody that's now going to say, all right, we're doing things differently. And that's exactly what Mike Sullivan did last year for Pittsburgh after they fired their head coach. And what happened? Oh, they only won a Stanley Cup. I'm not saying that that's going to happen. They don't have the talent that Pittsburgh does, obviously. But maybe they can kind of regroup a different voice in the locker room and move forward finally.
All right. Let's move forward.
Well, we will. However, I just want to get this one thing in here. The most appealing attraction, right? I saw this a little while ago. I had to get this in. The most appealing attraction right now at the Barclays Center, not the Islanders who stink, not the Nets who are just as bad. It is a new addition to, I guess, the menu at one of the concession areas. It is called the Lemon Drop. It is vanilla ice cream, lemon curd, wafer crumbs, and marshmallow. It looks like a steaming pile of crap. I swear, go look at the ESPN. It was on, I think it was Twitter by ESPN guy reporter.
Probably
whatever.
Darren Revelle. He's known for that.
Oh, yeah. It may have been him, actually. Yeah. And you see a picture of it. I see if their mouth is watering and they all of a sudden have a desire to go to get that thing at the Barclays Center.
Oh, we're gonna eat it together then. That's what it
means. I guess we will now. It looks
I'm gonna feed it to you like I fed you at weddings.
Well, I have to be really drunk, and I have to be really drunk anyway to tolerate Islanders hockey or to get myself through an Islander hockey game. So if I'm really drunk, you could feed the lemon curd.
Before, so I don't see why this would be any.
The lemon curd.
A pile of dog crap.
I just burst out laughing when I saw the picture of it. that's the most appealing attraction right now at the Barclays Center. All right, next. New York Knickerbockers.
Hey, look, how about the Knickerbockers? They're 6-7. Uh-huh. They won two of their last three games since we had the show. They hung on against the Pistons. They kind of were holding on to a 10-point lead most of that game, and then Detroit made a little run late, and Detroit had a chance to tie as time expired, and they missed.
Great game from what's-his-face.
And they couldn't slow down the Wizards.
Oh, they were
Washington
terrible.
The
oh, the Wizards
night.
Just the Knicks defense was literally non-existent in that game. Oof.
Yeah, but then they beat the Hawks yesterday.
They did.
They beat the Hawks yesterday.
Actually sent out a Twitter. I don't know if you saw my Twitter after that debacle against the Wizards. I guess I referenced Kurt Rambis and his proclivities towards looking at certain images on the Twitters, and maybe his attention was focused there as opposed to being focused on improving the Knicks' defense that night. So, oops.
I have to admit that I cannot keep up with the volume of Twitters because you have been killing it. So,
the light bulb went on for that one. So I was like, oh, I got to get that on the Twitters.
Oh, I got it.
All right, next. So the Atlanta
I think
Hawks.
Most people, when they have to get it on the Twitters, they just like pick up their phone and they just kind of do it casually. They don't have this like, moment where
epiphany.
It's like an epiphany and they have to say it out loud and like delay the process by a minute because they have to acknowledge how excited they are to write it. They just kind of write it. But
Yeah, but I don't have to put every stupid mundane thought that comes into my head on the Twitters. People do that, but I don't have to do that. I'm an H.
No,
I'm a hipster.
It's not a mock. You're killing it. Wow, what a long touchdown for Oakland.
Was it to Amari Cooper? I didn't see.
No, it was number 49.
Okay, good.
Cooper. 70-yard pass to.
Yes. Do I have a chance for most points still of the week? Ooh.
To Demise Olalaway, 75-yard touchdown pass.
Who in the hell is that?
He's like a fullback type, but he turned on the Jets there.
I see. Interesting. Well, Derek Carr was doing nothing early, so I guess he's.
So the Knicks play Portland. They host Portland tomorrow, and then they do back to back against Charlotte on I think it's Thursday. No, they don't play on Thanksgiving. They play Friday and Saturday back to back, where they alternate venues with the Hornets. They host the Hornets on Friday, then they go to Charlotte on Saturday, and. Look, I feel like they just need time and they have talent, but we'll see. I think they'll stay competitive as long as their core players stay healthy.
It'll take time to get a little cohesion, and I think they're moving in that direction. At least you like to think that they are. Obviously, I mean, look, Porzingis, he's turning into a superstar, and you're going to see a lot more games like you saw the game he had against the Pistons the other night. And you know, we're
25 at halftime in that one.
Yeah, Anthony had a great game against Atlanta. So for one game it's Porzingis is the focal point. Next game it's Anthony. Maybe Rose is shooting the lights out in one. They have guys that could score. They have guys that can facilitate the offense, and they're going to create matchup problems for other teams. I mean, you're seeing it now. I mean, whether they maintain their commitment on the defensive end is anybody's guess. With Kurt Rambis distracted by other things, so we'll see how that plays out. I mean, Noah, does he have a role on this team right now? He didn't play against the Hawks. I guess he was sick, but the two guys that replaced him, O'Quinn and Hernan Gomez, I think is his name, did a pretty good job. So, and Atlanta's a good team. Atlanta's one of the better teams in the conference. And, well, they play Charlotte twice, as you pointed out, and Charlotte's off to a pretty good start themselves. Shocking. Charlotte Bobcats, really a good team? No, can't be. But, they're moving, it looks like, in the right direction, and hopefully Phil stays hands off with his coach.
Let's go to a game, and we should buy Kurt Rambis jerseys.
Old school Kurt Rambis Laker jerseys. Yeah, so we should like check the eBays and see if it's on there, like for like $1.49. Have my old Kurt Rambis.
Kurt. Where's your Twitter account, Kurt? Images that he liked. Print out the images that he liked.
Okay. Look at the stains on the yellow Laker jersey. It's a very pronounced stain. It must be bleach. It must be bleach that when he washes jersey. All right.
Well, why don't you cue me up for the final segment here of our show?
I will, but we haven't done a formal hipster moment of Zenith. So before we get to the hipster beer of the week.
Yeah.
So I just want to this to me was my moment of Zenith. So the Rutgers, who joined the Big East, what was it, like 3 or 4 years ago, something like that, right?
The Big Ten.
Oh, I'm sorry. When I say Big Ten. I'm sorry. Big Ten. So Rutgers now in the Big Ten. And
I think it was three. No, this is, I think, their third year in the Big Ten.
Third year? Okay. So you want to say that they're building up to the other teams in the Big Ten, whatever. They've played they've played Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Penn State. And that's not exactly a great Michigan State team, as we know. Obviously, Michigan and Ohio State, good, and Penn State, I guess, good. So in the four games, though, against those teams, Rutgers has been outscored, you ready for this? 224-0.
That's
brutal. And they have been outgained 2,258-382 in those four games.
Oh my God. So they've let up an average of 550 yards.
Yeah, something like that.
And So what one
an average less than 100 yards a game themselves.
So what one team averaged in the four games, they didn't get total in the four games.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
Can you that is, I mean, unbelievable. Well, I guess I should say, I mean, that is just astounding, though. And you can only help but laugh at that. My God.
Wow, what a joke.
224 to nothing. Not a single point. But even the yardage, my God.
Not even a single point.
Oh, that is your moment, and the hipster moment of scene for the week. You could enjoy that one. That'll last everybody until our next show next week.
Poor Scarlet Knights.
Poor Scarlet Knights. But hey, it's a New York market. Hey, we want that New York market in the Big Ten. Yeah, or the New Brunswick market, I guess, then New York market.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe
I
one day.
I went to one game. They had not so bad of a tailgate scene, but when you get trounced like this week after week, geez.
You went to a game this year? Did you go one of those games?
No, it was a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
No, it was like a homecoming against Houston, and they got killed.
I'm sure they got killed. I'm sure whoever it was, they probably got killed.
It was
killed.
The year before they joined the Big Ten.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I see. All right. Well, next. All right. Well, and that brings us to, from the moment of Zia to our hipster beer of the week. Take it away, Mr. Hip.
All right. Well, this... I'm gonna start it by saying no, I did not go to this brewery. I look forward to going to it, but it did not entail a brewery visit. We've been keeping that streak going pretty well overall the last 10 episodes or so, but gonna have to hit some more Jersey breweries because there's a bunch that I still haven't been to. Speaking of which, Brotherton Brewery.
I see.
I had never heard of it until I was out for lunch somewhere downtown Jersey City, and the place had five beers on tap, and the four seemed meh. And then there was just one that said very nonchalantly, Brotherton IPA. I'm like, all right, well, never heard of it. Let's see what happens. It was unbelievable. I gave it 4.75 out of 5 on Untappd. That's the regular IPA. I had not given a beer that high of a rating ever on Untappd. I've never given a 5 out of 5.
I see.
It had the right haze. You know those hazy IPAs? It had the aroma, and it had the juicy taste. It reminded me of the Sloop. The Sloop.
Hang on, Sloopy.
Juice Bomb, which was a previous hipster beer of the week.
That was a double dry hopped or a triple dry hop something? I'm learning, you see, I'm learning.
So Brotherton, here's Brotherton's deal. They were established last year. They're located in a town called Schmong, New Jersey.
What the hell?
I've been to Schmong. Coincidentally. I have family in Schmong, and I was there.
Is that where the governor's mansion is?
I was there 2 summers ago. It's southern Jersey. Yeah. It's far from you have. It's over an hour.
It sounds like Christy should live there. That's what I'm saying. Schmong, Jersey.
So what I had yesterday was there, it's called a Jersey Devil Double IPA. So 8.3%. And for 8.3%, it was excellent.
Sounds pretty
good. Thing about Brotherton is they do not distribute cans or bottles. They're not at that point yet.
That's a shame.
Everything is draft. So if you're lucky enough to find it in a bar or you get a growler of it at a beer store. They're still fairly new, but I, you know, of the Jersey beers that I've had, 2 for 2 with Brotherton, like amongst the best.
Easily. Damn. How about that?
So I think they're, you know, as long as they don't screw up their progress, they're going to be a big player when they decide to expand their production because their beer is that good.
Damn. So wait, but you said you didn't go. So but they don't give out cans or bottles. So you had it where?
I had the first one. I had the regular IPA at a bar restaurant.
Oh, okay. They have it. Okay.
Yeah, and then I picked up a growler in at a New Jersey buy right on Saturday. There was
they sell like the growler with the beer, so you're not like.
That's right.
Oh, okay. So that's okay. All right.
In New Jersey. See, this is not as common in New York, but in New Jersey, the beer stores have like like 5 to 7 taps where you could get a growler.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely not a New York thing.
It is in New York. There are places where you could find it, but it's not quite as pronounced.
I see. All right.
It exists.
Yeah.
New York is different for them, because you could get beer in anywhere in New York, meaning like convenience stores. New Jersey doesn't work that way. You can't go to a 7-Eleven and get beer in New Jersey. It's in designated licensed places that only sell beer, wine, or liquor.
Yeah, I see.
It's just a different animal. Anyway, so if you ever see Brotherton, I don't know if you're going to see it in New York. I don't know if they've gotten there yet, actually. You may have to be in Jersey to try Brotherton.
Yeah, as I say, the distribution's probably not very not very expanded there, I guess, yet, right? So they just established last year.
But you know what? So. The bars in New York that have really good craft selection, they probably know it exists, or they'll find it, and if they can get it, they will. I don't know if they can get it. This is where it gets into the legal stuff. By the way, I will just mention, I don't have a whole thread on it, but let's just mention this impending merger between FanDuel and DraftKings.
FanDuel, is it going to be DraftDuel, or is it going to be FanKings, it going to be called now?
No. You thought that maybe having two companies competing would make it a more competitive marketplace for the players, but now if you just have one giant player dominating the whole market, kind of loses its flair a little bit, I think.
Yeah. Competition. Who needs competition? We don't need competition in this country, right? Yeah,
it's kind of like all the small players have that much bigger of a hurdle to clear facing this Goliath. All right. Well, anyway, so, we'll wish everyone a great Thanksgiving and their appetizers, as the Lip initiated this episode with, focusing on that. And we'll see you next week.
Yes, everybody, as the Hip said, happy Thanksgiving. And you'll have some good football to go along with your turkey and your mashed potatoes and your yams and your pie and all the trimmings, of course. So enjoy that Thursday. You got some good games. I am very much looking forward to drinking some hipster beers and eating a ton of food and then slipping into my food coma as I watch the Andrew Luckless potentially Colts take on the Steelers after
is Hasselbeck the backup still?
Oh God, I don't think so. Is he?
I have no idea.
No, actually, I'm not sure. I actually don't know who the backup is there. But yeah, I guess Luck may not play. He was in concussion protocol apparently, so it may not play on Sunday or Thursday, I should say. So we'll see what happens there. But you do have two very good games, as the early game will be for first place, Minnesota-Detroit. And then the late game, of course, you have your darling boy, or the country's darling Cowboys, against the very good Washington Redskins. So watch out for those Redskins, Cowboys. They are.
What's their record now?
The Redskins are 6-3-1. The Giants sit at 7-3, and the Cowboys are at 9-1. So a very jam-packed NFC East.
Yeah.
So
these games are going to be interesting. Okay. For the Giants in December, Scott Tolzien is the backup. He backed up Aaron Rodgers like a couple of years ago.
Scott Tolzien. Well, good thing I'll be in a semi comatose state after eating and drinking as much as I plan to, so yes. I won't have to sit there conscious to watch the amazing Scott Tolzien throw wounded ducks over the middle of the field.
All right. So have a great holiday. Yep.
Have a Thanksgiving, everybody, and we'll see you next time. All right. Next. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Oh, yes. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Kurt Ram.